Hey everybody, welcome to the Radical Center Studios, where this is the Radical Center program broadcasting as ever from sunny downtown Austin, Texas. This is yours truly, Jonathan Langley. And today we have so much to get through. We have reams of paper as usual. It is Dan, my long-suffering producer, and myself yet again doing it solo, basically, because Jack is not here. She'll be back very, very soon. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for writing. It's quite a few letters we're trying to get through today, and we're going to see if we can squeeze it all in the time allotted, if we can make it spicy and get it done and everything. So if you're an independent, you've come to the right place, because yours truly, I do like to think of myself as an independent. Now, again, if you haven't heard me before, my friends on the right think I'm a communist, and my friends on the left think I'm a Trump supporter, which means I'm doing my job as an independent. It means I'm actually, well, annoying everybody. But hopefully you'll agree with some of the things I have to say, because as an independent, I like to think that we recognize there are good ideas on both sides. And as I read out the other week, 50% of Americans, far more than Democrat or Republican, identify as independent. All right, with that, I'm focusing on facts as best we can. Let's get right in. Now, for the last few weeks, we've had some fun with the emails that I received, supposedly from people like Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump Jr., Josh Hawley and others, Ted Cruz, saying that the Democrats are despicable and we really need money, because if we don't, basically America's going to go down the shit pan. That's basically what they're saying. So I get so many, literally hundreds and hundreds. I think the other day I got 80 or 90 in one day. So definitely 500 or 600 a week on average of these things. And the ones that what we decided to do is choose one or two that actually kind of, you know, we can make fun of. Because I was watching a video the other day of on YouTube of, you know, these scam artists from India. And I've come to the conclusion, and I'm going to read a tweet as well, supposedly from the GOP account, well, actually I think it was, that essentially what the GOP has done, and I think you'll agree with me once you've heard this, is farm out their back office functions to some of these call centers in India to try and raise money. It's a, you know, these call centers that like to say, if you don't pay me, your children or your grandchildren are going to be arrested, or the IRS is after you, or your Windows machine's been infected by terrorists from Syria or something like that, right? So this actually tells me that when you look at what I'm about to say to you, that the GOP back office is literally being farmed out. They have taken American jobs and basically given it to India. And you might be going, why is that? Pourquoi? Pourquoi? All right. Now, I've spoken about Ted Cruz before, about his fixation on Dr. Seuss. It's good to know their priority is not healthcare or child mortality or anything, jobs, infrastructure. It's good to know, because I got another email. This is the second one in a few days. I read the other one out last week from Ted Cruz saying he's as tough as Texas. And Ted Cruz, as tough as Texas, is saying in a headline, I'm not abandoning Dr. Seuss. Well, that's really good to know. Jonathan, at this point, I'm sure you've heard, I've discussed it on Fox News. Well, that makes sense. Cancel culture is out of control. The liberals now want to cancel Dr. Seuss. Now, this is slightly different from the other one he sent the other week, where he said that Joe Biden personally wanted to cancel Dr. Seuss. But hey, Ted Cruz says again, I'm drawing a line in the sand on this one. So, again, Ted, if I wanted to pay you money, man, that would have done it for me. That's it. That's the reason. Now, that's not the hit of the week. This is the hit of the week. I mean, seriously, I don't even, when I first read this one I'm about to read out, I didn't know if they were being serious. So this is from something or group called GOP Leadership. So I have no idea. I guess I'm not – this one felt they couldn't say it was from Newt Gingrich or someone. He basically says, this letter – President Trump may have teased running again in 2024, you think, against bold Meghan Markle. And when I first read this, I was like, what? Is this satire? You're telling me you want money from me because you're saying Donald Trump may run against someone who's married to Prince Harry? Is that what you're telling me? Apparently, yes, it is, because he goes on to say, that's right. Actress and former princess Meghan Markle, is she no longer? I don't know. Has been toying with the idea, according to Donald Trump, and she'll be running against Donald Trump. But I don't know, did she say she's going to run as a Democrat? I don't know. We think Trump would win in a landslide. What do you think? Who would you vote for? And then they ask for money. Because you click on this, I'd vote for Trump or Merkel. Markle, excuse me. President Trump is waiting on what you think before he makes any major decisions. Let him know immediately. Oh, my God. Donster is waiting for me before he decides whether or not he's going to run against Meghan Markle. Oh, my God. Now, the reason I get this is why I said it almost sounds like some guy in the back office in some alley in Delhi is basically going, how can I get the Americans to send money? I know. We'll say Trump's going to run against Meghan Markle. I mean, seriously, who falls for this nonsense? Who believes it? I mean, come on. Could you imagine Donald Trump running against Meghan? I tell you what. If Meghan Markle becomes the nominee for the Democrats and Trump, if he's cognitively capable, running as in 2024 when he'll be 78 years old or thereabouts as the GOP nominee, there's first off, we know in reality this is no way. But the fact they actually sent that email, my God. Now, the other – I do have this. I do have to read this before I get on to reality, farming and, you know, jobs and stuff we actually care about, healthcare, those sort of things. You know, just stuff that happens. I did want to talk about this tweet. So the GOP's, this is from the official GOP tweet. Now, this is why I think they farmed everything out to India, because we know how many times have you received emails, not just obviously over the phone, but emails soliciting you because you need to send money to Nigeria, or your machine's infected. Click here to download the antivirus that's going to infect your machine anyway, and so on and so on. So this tweet went out. And on the surface, it sounds okay, but I'll explain it. It goes like this. Keeping schools closed has devastating effects on the mental health, social, and economic situation and academic achievements of America's children. The science is in, although it's not. Schools can safely reopen. Sounds okay, except, remember, this is from about schools and education. They spelt the word devastating. By the way, devastating is all caps, taking a page from the Donster. They spelt it D-E-V, guess what? E-S-T-A-T-I-N-G. That's right. It's got two E's in it. So remember, the Twitter thingy, the Twitter machine doesn't allow you to edit. You can delete it. But it was up there for a long time before someone went, huh, they're mocking our education tweet, and here we are in large caps spelling devastating incorrectly, and we're talking about children and schools and academic achievement. Well, serious, you cannot make this up. This is the focus of the GOP. Dr. Seuss. Cancel culture, misspelling, and farming all this stuff out to India, as well as, of course, Meghan Markle. That's the – thank you, Dan, for reminding me. That's good to know that the priorities of America – healthcare, infrastructure, child mortality, making sure we take care of people who really need it, and so on. It's good to know that they're focusing on the things that are important. Now, one thing that keeps coming up, and I do want to get to an email, some emails, is Joe Biden talking about, before we get to facts and figures here, which is always a good idea, and that is, of course, what's going on at the border. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because we don't have enough time to go through it. But Joe Biden does need to get his arms around it. I think they've been taken by surprise. But I do want to read a couple of emails. One here from Steve, when he's basically saying people are complaining about Joe Biden and the border wall or the border, the problem. He says, what's wrong with Biden and that he hasn't solved this decades-long problem? That's fair. That's made exponentially worse by the previous administration, and he's only had 60 days. Come on, Joe, what a slacker. And, of course, he's being sarcastic. Well, actually, yeah, I mean, he's only been there 60 days, and it's about time that he solved that problem. But of course, perception is reality, so we do know that Biden and his team do need to get around it. And even if they had to send troops to the border, they would send the right statement. I'm not saying they should. That's entirely up to people that know more than me about what's going on. But regardless, they need to do that, because what it does, it distracts from the things that people should care about, right? The fact that COVID is not going away, the fact that thousands of businesses have gone broke and will go broke unless we open up the economy, but without killing old people, right? This type of thing. Or people like me, right? Or you, for that matter. So I get an email. This is a really good one. I do want to focus on this one because bees obviously took some time. I love these names that you guys give me, bees. I have no idea if bees are man or a woman. Or whatever. Whatever floats your boat. Bees said, a good leader helps and guides us to being the best we can be, our best, towards our better angels, towards goodness. Joe knows that deep in his soul. His long email was basically saying, this is what Joe, he's proud of Joe, even though Joe's kind of boring. And this is the whole thing, right? Joe, listen, he's not on his, you know, how should we say, he's getting on in years, right? I get it. But that's what I told friends of mine, that not one of my Republican friends, not one over the years has ever asked me, since I voted for Biden, and then previously that, not for Trump, I voted for Clinton, was why did I vote for the Democrats? And it's very simple. I vote in this case, I knew Trump's not a particularly nice guy, not particularly good. And you might argue, well, I can't believe you're going to say that about Clinton. But certainly with Biden, I voted for decency. And that's all I want. I want boring. I don't need to be involved in every piece of minutia that's going on in the government. Do your job. Leave me alone. If you need to raise taxes, lower taxes, build a bridge, I don't care. Get on and do your job. So Bees hit it pretty good. He says, Joe knows this deep in his soul about goodness. And I actually agree with that. I think Joe's a good guy. Everything Donnie did was to divide us, to hate and to create animosity. Actually, that's true. If you think about this, right, which part of America – you always say people, these people, I love America. I just – the GOP, I'm a patriot. I've got the American flag on my lapel just to prove how patriotic I am because I wear the American flag. But then which part of America do you actually like? We know you don't like the liberal West Coast, so that's California and Seattle. You don't like liberal cities like Portland. We know that they attack here in Texas where Greg Abbott lives. They don't like Austin, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio. These are actually democratically run cities. We know they don't like unions. They don't like teachers because teachers belong to unions. No one's making them join it. They choose to join a union. They don't like unions that run the car factories because that's where American workers are. So they obviously don't like some of these American workers. We know they don't like media apart from Fox News. So that's New York Times, MSNBC, CNN. Hate all them. We know they don't like big tech. We know that too. When you add it all up, certainly the 80 million people that voted for Joe Biden. So they don't like big cities, liberal cities. They don't like liberal states. New York, oh my God, they'd have a heart attack. We know they don't like unions. They don't like big tech. They don't like media, right? So we add it all up. I actually did this once just for grins on the back of a napkin. What's left? There's 280 million people in America, adults. At least 210 million of them don't fit the criteria of what some of these people would like. So unless you're really a gun-toting, Fox News-watching, living in the country, but that's not California or New York or maybe Florida, I guess, you're okay there, and maybe Alabama, what's left? They actually don't like America at all. They only like the little piece that is – they certainly don't like people that don't have their religion. They certainly don't like Muslims. So – or the Chinese, apparently, Chinese-Americans. So what's left? Not a lot. Nothing is left. I mean, there's like this little sliver. So I guess if out of 280 million people, just to be generous, 280 million adults, 80 to 90 million of them, so a third, essentially, they might approve of. The rest can go to hell. So they don't really like America at all. All right. I think I've done to death the GOP turning into a call center from India. as I said, they farmed it out. I have absolutely no doubt about that, that they farmed it out. They can't spell, and I get these emails that remind me of something from India. So let's focus on reality, because I want to focus on the stimulus package, and I want to focus on farmers, because this is a big one for us, right? We talk about this a lot. What do I do next, Dan? I'm trying to find my paperwork here. What do I do next? You want to – oh, okay. We're going to talk about Steve Rattner. Okay. And then we're going to talk about farmers. Okay. So we're going to play a snippet from Steve Rattner. Now, in case you don't know who Steve Rattner is, Steve Rattner's on MSNBC. No, I know. You're going to go. He's just a liberal elitist, and he doesn't care. But Steve Rattner was the guy. He's an economist who was a business person who was bought in 2009 when the car companies were basically going broke, right? GM, Government Motors. Remember all that fun and games would have mean millions of – it's funny. It's fun to make fun of things when you have no skin in the game. Sean Hannity and little bow tie boy Tucker Carlson. When they were saying that, I'll just let it go. We're bailing it out. It's Government Motors. It's terrible. Never mind that millions of jobs were at stake, you know, when you add up everything. So Steve Rattner actually was part of that team, and he said, listen, people criticize us for bailing out, although Ford didn't, but Chrysler, GM, and any other industries that were attached to some of these, that they criticized us for bailing this out. And he said they should have just sold them on. Why didn't we let General Motors merge with Chrysler or let Ford buy it or maybe Toyota, a foreign company? Could you imagine that happening? And his answer was very good. I remember it distinctly. He said, no one wanted it. No one wanted these companies. If we hadn't spent that money, then we would have lost these companies. That's essentially what would have happened. And the ramifications would have gone on for decades. Decades. So the reason I bring up Steve Rattner, whether or not you agree with him, and I know he's on Morning Joe, is, and we're going to play it in a second, he talks about the amount of money that the stimulus is giving out. Now, it's $1.9 trillion, which by an amazing amount of coincidence is the same as the tax cut, more or less, that went to large corporations and the wealthy. And you're like, oh, but Langley, no, I got extra money in my pocket from the tax cut from Donald Trump. Well, first off, remember these tax cuts were supposed to pay for themselves. Even pre-COVID, that wasn't happening. We blew up the deficit. That seems to have disappeared. We haven't worried about that for a long time. But the average person, remember, only received $900 a year. That's $100, you know, $80 a month. That's pretty good. He said the average person's cost of living went up by about $1,000 because of tariffs on all the things they were buying from China and all this stuff. Just a minor detail. Anyway, Steve Rattner makes a point, and we're going to play it, in that the tax cuts, which went to large corporations, remember they were going to invest and hire tens of thousands of Americans, thousands and thousands and thousands of people, that they were going to spend all this money and it was going to pay for itself. But what we've since now know for a fact, 60% of that $1.9 trillion went to the top 20% of the earners in the United States, the top 20%. And I already hear the answer. I already know. Yeah, but Langley, you don't understand. They're the ones who are paying most of the taxes. That's only part of the story. It's things like, if we want to reduce child poverty, we have to give people money to help them pay for their children. So even if they're not paying taxes, we should help them make those children. I would have thought this would be priority for the so-called pro-life people, making sure that if they have this kid, they can take care of it. So Steve will explain to us in a second, but this is the exact opposite with what Biden's doing. 60% of this value is going to go to the bottom 20%. And isn't that exactly how it should be? We want to take care of these people. We want to lower child mortality in this country. We want to increase life expectancy. Life expectancy in this country, Dan's telling me I'm getting on my high horse. Okay, I get it. But life expectancy in this country compared to other Western countries is years behind. That just scared the freaking freak out of you. All right. Moment over. Dan, play Mr. Steve Rattner. Thank you.
And then if you look another way at the impact of these on the next chart, you can see this equally starkly, perhaps even more starkly. This is how each of these bills affected people at different income levels. So on the left side, you have the lowest income level, the lowest 20% of people. 23% of the benefits of this plan go to those people in the bottom 20%. Only 1% of the TCJA went to those people. If you look all the way over on the right, 65%, the red bar, 65% of the TCJA went to the top 20% of Americans, and just 11% of this bill, mostly the $1,400 checks, which do cut off themselves at $160,000, went to the top 11%. So you can just see the dramatic skewing in who's helped and who's helped more and who's helped less between these two bills. Now, lastly, let's take a look at this whole notion of government leaning back in and government becoming more muscular and what government can do if it does. This is the poverty rate. This is what the percentage of people that the government estimates are living at or below the poverty line. And you can see it was higher in 2011-12 as the economy recovered, mm-hmm. It drifted down. And then the black oval is the impact of the TCJA. The TCJA barely by 0.3 percentage points moved the poverty rate down. But now look at that dotted blue line that ends in the black circle. This is what is estimated the American Rescue Plan will do. It will cut poverty by a third. We have never done anything like that in our entire history in 1 year. It will cut child poverty by more than half. It will bring poverty down to just over 8%. And you can see it was drifting around 12 to 16% before this bill was passed.
All right. So that was Ratner from the Morning Joe show the other weekend. I thought it was really important because the fact that he explains, and obviously there's some slides he's talking to, but he's explaining in basic English that in this case, the Joe Biden stimulus package is not just tax cuts. It's helping poorer families or the less well-off be able to afford to take care of the children that they've already got. God forbid that we do that and reduce poverty in the United States. There is a time and a place for everything, and this is it. The only trouble, of course, with it is that, unfortunately, it's not permanent, right? But hopefully he can make some of these child tax credits and other things permanent. So this is, to me, if you're an out-and-out conservative, government is terrible, I would have thought you would want this. You want something that actually helps. If you're pro-life, you would want something that actually helps younger children, children under 5 in particular, really anybody under 17 or 17 and under, but in particular children under 5, be able to have access to health care, to food, to help the parents with child care, whatever it might be, because you can't claim, given that we are so bad at this stuff, that private enterprise is picking up the slack. Clearly, it isn't. And again, I'm not advocating a complete takeover, government takeover of all these things. I'm just making the point. I actually, as an independent, don't care how it's delivered so long as we get the best results. And if the best result is private, great. If the best result turns out to be doing it through government, fine. I really don't care. I'm a pragmatist. And that's where I'm being biased here. That's where we all should be. So when we pay, as we've spoken about many times on this program, twice as much for healthcare per person than GDP, for worse outcomes, something is clearly broken. So what we need to do, and I think Biden's in the right place to do it, which even though like Bees and some of these emails I've received are talking about, where is Joe? I'm happy with that. Just get the job done, man. Get the damn job done. It is shameful that people die in this country because they can't have access to proper health care. Just pitiful. All right. Now, the other one I wanted to talk about. So thank you, Mr. Ratner, for that. The other one I wanted to talk about was U.S. farmers. Now, we've spoken about farmers quite a bit before, mainly because the farming community, even though they're very, I truly believe this, their patriotism was taken advantage of by the GOP. So, for example, Donald Trump says, we're going to put tariffs on China. China retaliates. How do they retaliate? By putting tariffs on American farming products, agricultural products. Devastated many of the farms, what are they with all the soybeans and stuff, right? People that make have pigs, you know, pork. They lost market share. This is all true. I'm not making this up, Sean Hannity, to Brazil or to Spain. They lost, our farmers lost market share. The only way they could stay afloat was then we had to take the taxpayers' money, which Donald Trump said came from tariffs, which is nonsense, to bail them out to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. So now we have a situation where supposedly it's improving. I've read that China is buying more, for example, soybeans. However, the other big one, you may remember, Trump made a big deal of this. We said we weren't going to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Remember that? The TPP, because he felt that it would allow too many imports into this country. I love tariffs. They pay for themselves. The Chinese are paying for it. It's total nonsense. Total nonsense. You have to be, seriously, you'd have to have Donald Trump's brain to try and justify that one. So here's an example. By not joining the TPP, guess who got hurt? Yeah, you got one guess. Farmers, American farmers. The TPP, for example, so U.S. beef exports to Japan, which would be part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, will be hit with a 39% tariff up from the 26% tariff that used to be on it. Now, I've been to Japan many times, and I can tell you that they're very protective of their farmers. I understand it. Every country is, and we should be. But at the same time, Japanese beef is massively expensive. So even with that 25% tariff that exists today, American beef had a chance, had access to competing with the homegrown product, which was much more expensive. But now that tariff is going up to 39%. And this came from the Wall Street Journal. God forbid, the Wall Street Journal. The World Socialist, it can't be possible. If I had said New York Times or the Amazon Washington Post, that's the Wall Street Journal. How can it possibly be true? As he goes on to say, this isn't a problem for farmers in New Zealand, Canada, Australia, the main competition for U.S. farmers. Of course, we all know these countries have massive farming industries. And, of course, Australia is and New Zealand are particularly close geographically to China. These countries are members of the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for the TPP, which continued on without the United States. However, these countries face the same 26%, 25.8% tax on chilled and frozen beef. And you might be going, see, they're no better off, and we're 38, 39%. So what? That's only a 10% difference, but it's actually an increase of a third if you think about percent of actual numbers there, in tariff numbers, that is. But guess what? By 2033, which if you think about it isn't that far away, is going to fall to 9%. So the United States will be stuck with a tariff of 38%, and it sounds like it's a gradual decline. These other countries will be faced with a tariff of 9%. So, and there's no triggers there. There's some kind of trigger built in, but which won't be triggered, assuming these companies stay part of the TPP. All sounds well and good, right? So, yet again, the American farmer for this is being thrown on the pyre of sort of, I don't know, no common sense whatsoever. We're asking farmers to sacrifice themselves for something that they've been told is 100% great, when in fact it isn't. And of course, it's not just China and Japan that are in these in the TPP. It's South Korea, right? As I said, the ASEAN countries, which of course includes New Zealand and Australia and other countries. It goes on to say there are bigger disadvantages to remaining outside the bloc, which have only become more glaring since the U.S. opted to withdraw. This partnership that was signed last year, that was a year in the making, it's unambitious, but is potential launchpad for further economic integration, with Beijing being an influential participant. In other words, we're not there to help set the rules. And if you don't think it matters, I'm just going to end with this part. This is why the United Kingdom applied to join this partnership. They applied because if more countries are in the bloc and they can set a liberal democratic trade rules, then they can help control China. Exactly. If you're not, if you don't have a skin in the game, you can't play, right? If you don't up your ante, you can't play. So the fact the United States is not part of the TPP, for the reason that Trump said, well, it's because, you know, these people are just going to import all this cheap stuff here. Just to remind you what we said a few weeks ago, the deficit with China is as big as it's ever been. How'd that work out? It didn't, in case you were wondering. It didn't. So when I get all these emails and they're worrying about Dr. Seuss or was it Meghan Markle? For God's sake, Meghan Markle. Or, all, you know, even the border is a distraction. I get it. It's more important than whether Meghan Markle or Dr. Seuss exists, right? But still, they're not, none of these emails that I get, not one, I promise you, I will read it. I will fall over in surprise if one of them says, hey, guess what? We're here to help farmers. We're here to help you, the average person who's sending me $5 of your hard-earned money, find decent access to healthcare that's affordable. And here's how we're going to do it. They don't do any of that. They don't do any of that. So that is why I think Biden's actually could be a game-changing president. Oh, one other thing. Thanks, Dan. Remember how Donald Trump said it's better to be friends with Russia or not? Well, I can't argue with that, except we then find out that Russia was the one who put bounties on American soldiers. And Trump goes, oh, we don't think it was Russia. No, we don't think they put bounties on Americans. We think it was China that did it. We think it was China. I'm not sure. No one's told me. But, I mean, could you imagine if that had been Hillary Clinton, if she had been president, or Obama? Could you imagine Sean Hannity's, well, bow tie boy, his bow tie, you know those cartoons where the bow tie spins around really fast? His face would explode. It'd go all red, and his bow tie would be spinning like, you know what? Seriously, that's what would happen. And shallow how Sean Hannity would be. His jowls would be even bigger. So when Donald Trump never did anything, and remember, tore up the translator's notes from many of those meetings with Putin, it's actually kind of interesting that Biden said that he said when he was asked if he believes Vladimir Putin was a killer, he said, I do. There you go. Now, if that isn't tough talk, guys, if you're a strong, you know, conservative, I believe in the power of the military and American might, calling the leader of Russia a killer, I would say you should be pretty proud of that. I would have thought, Ted Cruz, you should be writing me, telling me that this is really important and you'll agree with it. Okay, well, listen, that's the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening. This is The Radical Center. My name is Jonathan Langley. By the way, if you're on the feeds that we put out, and you accidentally got a children's book. This did happen. A children's book a podcast that showed up, written by me. I apologize. We're going to fire Dan after the show. All right, well, listen, everybody, take care. God bless. Thank you for listening. Look out for us on Amazon coming up soon. We're doing a lot more. And Jack will be back soon. Everybody, take care. God bless. Speak to you very, very soon.